3 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. News time, just about 12:30. Dave Malarkey's coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
Now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Nice to be with us here on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk to begin the program today. A little bit later, we're going to be chatting with guest Kim Dana Kupperman, who has written a historical fiction novel from World War II. It's interesting. It's something I'd never heard about before, something that actually happened a lot in World War II. That's coming up a little bit later, but open talk to begin with. So here's the phone number, 283-2525, as always. The subject of conversation is up to you, whenever you want to talk about, 283-2525. So let's get right to the people here on open talk today. Hi there, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
I'm commenting on a story that that you talked about earlier this morning in the news,
mm-hmm.
or that I heard earlier in the news, that there were some doctors in Tennessee who had a boom clinic who built the Medicare program out of millions of dollars.
Boy, that's a story I'm not familiar with. That must have been a network news story that you heard here this morning?
I bet it was a network news story, yes. And I hope you get to look into it further, but you know, they say Medicare funding, but who's on the other side watching how? I'm hoping that most of our doctors and their financial staff are upright and doing the right and correct thing. But this is taxpayer dollars, and those millions of dollars just with that one pain clinic, that yeah. one doctor's office. Where could that be used to be doing so much good? In research, cancer research, you know, drug addiction research?
Oh, I'm into that. We have had stories of Medicare fraud, and unfortunately, you know, there are unscrupulous people in all walks of life, even some doctors, obviously. But, I the Medicare program is... it's pretty good. It's hard to imagine, you know, for people who are seniors today or baby boomers who may be approaching that age. We didn't have that until the 1960s. That's when Medicare came into being. Can you imagine people today trying to get along without Medicare? Goodness.
Right. And another thing that's on my mind this morning, I just heard from my niece that my nephew's being discharged from the hospital. He's got to go back in for heart surgery next week, but they don't have a choice about him coming home. They just I believe that's insurance company directed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your time's up in here. We'll see. We'll bring you back in time for the surgery next week, but you know, it's home health care for now.
Yeah, well, that's you're correct. That's almost certainly an insurance company decision, and you know that's. That's the new age of medical care. Look at, women having a baby. That's something I've obviously never done, but I can remember not all that long ago, you know, if a woman went into the hospital to have a baby, she was usually there for a few days, sometimes
well,
a little longer.
My mom might have been in there for even a whole week.
Yeah, not anymore. It's like 2 days, you know. You're in, you're out.
Yeah, you're lucky if you're 2 days. Well, thank you for allowing me to vent, and I would be interested to hear if any other of your listeners have a response to that, and if they've ever heard of Medicare fraud in our area or the county. Or Western Pennsylvania, because that's just one instance, and that was one that they caught. Mm-hmm. You know, luckily that was caught, but it doesn't mm-hmm. always happen that way.
Good point. Thanks for bringing it up. Good to talk with you today.
Yeah, thanks for allowing me to vent. Take
sure.
care. Bye.
283-2525. You can vent if you want to on this program. That's fine. We do that. Open talk here at 283-2525. 283-2525. Has anybody, I assume you've heard about this story, Face App, which apparently is sweeping the country. I'm not real big on social media, so until this story broke a few days ago, I was unaware of it. Face App, which is an app for your phone where you can upload a picture of yourself, and then you get back a picture of yourself, what you might look like, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And they Photoshop your image and then send it back. And hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people have done this, without knowing, of course, that it is a Russian company. That, if you're talking about online stuff and you hear that it's a Russian company, right away that's a huge red flag for me, given all the evidence of Russian meddling in the last election and other meddling by Russian companies. But people are, they've been uploading their picture. So what's the problem? Well, that means this company, and any company in the future that does business with them or buys images from them, they've got a picture of you. And with face recognition identification growing more and more and more and more, who knows what that might lead to in a couple of years. You could be subject to identity theft and all kind of stuff. They have your picture. And apparently a lot of people don't read the fine print because the company, it's called Wireless Lab, by the way. You'd never know it was a Russian company by that name, would you? Wireless Lab. So what are they doing with your picture? Well, they claim nothing. They claim, oh, no, this is very innocent. We're just, adding some wrinkles and stuff and telling people what they might look like 20, 30 years down the road. We're not doing anything else. But the fine print says that this Russian company has the right to use the photos on its servers in whatever way it pleases through a, quote, irrevocable, non-exclusive, royalty-free, worldwide, fully paid, transferable, sub-licensable license. In other words, they could sell your picture to anyone in the future without asking. And I kind of raises a red flag for me. You can pretty much kind of guess what you're going to look like as you grow older. People change, right? Did you see any pictures of the Pittsburgh Pirates of 1979 this past weekend when the Buccos honored the last World Series winning team, 40-year anniversary? And many of the players, still surviving players, were on hand, and it was kind of surprising to see them if you were a Pirate fan back in 1979 when Chuck Tanner was the manager, Tim Foley, Dave Parker, John Candelaria, Manny Sanguian, some of the other players, Kent Tekulve, and guess what? They look like they're about 40 years older, because they are, right? There are very few people. I know of a couple of people who pretty much look the same as they did 20 or 30 years ago. That's pretty amazing. But most people, you age, right? What's the big secret? Would you upload your photo to a Russian company to do with whatever they please forever in the future without telling you, without paying you, without anything? I wouldn't. Well, it's the dangers of social media today. It's a worldwide thing, the way a lot of people spend their time, their spare time these days. on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, Instagram, Snapchat. There's a lot of them out there right now. I personally, and I kind of debated this with my colleague Kate on the morning show today, I think the world would be a lot better off if we didn't have Twitter. I mean, you know, we got along pretty well without it, I think, for a long, long time. And I see, you know, these people, mainly celebrities, is, you know, 100,000 Twitter followers. What? I'm not one, but how do you have time to check all? if you're a follower of this person, that person, what do you check this all the time? You check this every day to see what they're doing? I don't know. Mystifies me. Whatever. Open talk at 283-2525 today, 283-2525. I miss the Butler Blue Sox. Yeah. For many years, we had the Butler Blue Sox going strong this time of the year. And you know, you'd see the lights on at Pullman Park. You know, drop down for an evening. Yeah, I miss the Blue Sox. Will they ever come back? I don't know. I don't know. We'd need some changes, I guess. And I don't know whether the previous group of owners still, you know, has a copyright or legal rights to the name. I don't know. I just miss the Blue Sox. And very soon, we're going to miss more newspapers. A story came out a few days ago that the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette was going to be dropping printed editions for a couple of more days of the week. They've already dropped their printed editions for 2 days of the week. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette does not print on Tuesdays, nor does it print on Saturdays. The paper is transitioning to digital online publication, and the word is that beginning of October, so we have August and September, two more months, the print edition will only be delivered 3 days a week. No word on what it'll be. And I would guess Sunday would be one of them because that's a big paper. But what would it be the other 2 days? I don't know. Do you like to have a newspaper in your hand? I do. I read digital editions of some newspapers. It's convenient, but it's not, for me at least, it's not the same as, you know, sitting down with a cup of coffee in the morning and your morning paper to browse through. Maybe it's generational. I don't know. I mean, it's easy enough to read it online, you know, on your laptop or your phone or your PC, whatever, at home. It doesn't seem to be the same to me. But obviously, it's, you know, holding your hand newspapers, it appears, will be a thing of the past. Yeah. I'll miss them whenever they finally disappear. 283-2525 is the number. I want to talk to you a little bit about Charles Singolani blog, which is one of my favorite things to pop in on every once in a while. But first of all, let's go back to the people here today on Open Talk. Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to commend you on that interview last week with Kevin Sodlin.
Yes, mm-hmm.
He was the fellow from Harvard that has a book out, The Student's Resistance Handbook.
Yes, pretty arresting conversation with him about, he referred to, well, in a nutshell, schools as prisons.
That was one of the best interviews I've ever heard on public radio waves for 30-some years, I guess, since I've been listening to talk radio all over the country.
Do you think that schools today are prisons?
Oh, I couldn't agree with him more on everything he said. Mm-hmm. I just didn't hear anything I disagreed with, and I just can't believe he's from Harvard, though. I mean, that's the starting point of compulsory education in Massachusetts. in the Harvard, whatever, Harvard intellectuals there back in the day.
Well, compulsory education began, public school education here in the United States back in the 1800s. Prior to that, the only families that sent their kids to school were the families could afford it, there was no public school education. When it became exactly mandatory, I'm not sure, but...
Well, I do believe Mass is the first state that had it, and it was originally from people out of Harvard there that up with it.
Well,
they were the first for all kinds of things, the driver's license, I think, and different stuff up there, but...
Well, let's talk about a little bit with the interview, because there were some things that he talked about that I disagreed with. For example, I think that mandatory education is a good thing. You don't want people to be educated? You don't want them to go to school?
Well, that's if you believe that it is education what they're up to. It'd be one thing if it was serious, but there's thousands of investigators and, just case studies, et cetera, that says that it's not really about education the way it's formatted or set up.
Well, wait a minute. How would you learn to, if we didn't have public schools, how would you learn to read? How would you learn to do arithmetic? How would you learn about history?
Well, that's what I think I said to you there that day. I talked to you before he come on. And I was talking about the Lyme disease investigation. But anyway, that's another thing. But their new goal is to have kids reading by 8 or 9 years old. That's a goal they have. Just knowing that it's not that should be the first primary. Where all efforts are given and all time and. Everything, it should not even be nowhere near that age where they're still struggling to read.
Well, when I was in elementary school, you started, you got your first reader, Dick and Jane, in first grade, and you gradually, went up the scale, learning to read more and more complicated things as you move through the primary grades,
Well, yeah, that's a whole ball of wax there, how they do it and what they're up to. But as far as that Kevin Sogel, I may be pronouncing his last name wrong. It was Kevin, C-E-V-I-N.
Yes, he spelled his name with a C instead of a K. Yeah.
He is aligned with another fellow that recently passed away, a John Taylor Gatto. This man, he was a public school teacher up in New York, all five boroughs, and... in the country, I believe, teacher of the year 3 or 4 times up there, and he dropped out of it. He finally started investigating the origins of it, and he just didn't think it was right the whole time what he was doing and being told how to do.
I hear what you're saying, but I still, I wonder where we would be without public education. How would people learn to read? How would they learn to count? How would they learn anything? Listen, got to move on. Always okay. Good to talk with you, though, my friend. Thanks very much for joining us today.
I wanted to tell you that was a great interview there. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the comments. Thanks.
Yep. Goodbye.
283-2525 is our number. Open talk on this segment if it's your turn. Hi there. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, I'm for education, and I'm also for newspapers.
Yeah. me too. I enjoy newspapers, and I will rue the day whenever you can no longer hold one in your hand.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but the Youngstown Vindicator is ceasing publication in August.
It's the last one I saw that note last week. I know a guy who works for the Youngstown Vindicator. So.
Oh, really? The newspapers are the first draft of history, and you think, what are you going to do for, like, genealogy purposes when you can't look up someone's obituary that passed away?
Well, I mean, you can do it online. It's not like information is going to disappear, but I don't know. It's just, if I'm browsing, it just seems to me that it's easier to hold a cup of coffee in one hand and my newspaper in the other in the morning,
Right.
Yeah. And we have a good local newspaper here, the Butler Eagle, which also has digital additions, but they seem to be healthy, and that's good. I think so.
That is good.
Yeah, I'm glad we have a local paper.
Yeah. Well, they did a study that they found out when local papers go out of business, that local government, the price to run government goes up because there's less discussion on what we're spending things for and what and how.
Mm-hmm. No,
and
no
less oversight.
No watchdog, huh?
Yeah, no watchdog. So
I agree.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dave. Have a good night.
And you too. Good to talk with you. Thanks. 283-2525 is our number. This line is next. Hi, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go ahead. It's your turn.
No problem, Dave. I am sometimes caller, but boy, did your interview with that gentleman really have me. I'm sorry. From my point of view, I am with you in how in the world would we have people truly educated if we did not have public schools.
Mm-hmm.
It was in my thinking back of history, the wealthy tutored their kids, and the regular normal people at the bottom of the ladder didn't have any way to give their children an education. And what kind of workers would we have in this country if you didn't have some education?
Not only what kind of...
How would you read and write, for heaven's sake?
You wouldn't.
How would you even understand what's going on in the world today if you didn't have a basic, Dave, education?
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I was so astounded. If I could have called you while he was talking. I'm sorry, I happen to be... I'm an old lady, so maybe I have a different view of the world. I'm going to be 88, and I value the education I got, even back in my time when perhaps your parents couldn't afford to send you to college. They offered in the Butler High Schools, which I attended. I live in a different area right now, but I still listen to my Butler stations. But I got a wonderful education in what they call the commercial course.
Mm-hmm.
I was able, in the years I was there, because I became proficient in typing, in taking shorthand, I was sent out of my class to, at that time, Dr. Anderson and Dr. Bean. Dr. Anderson was the superintendent. Dr. Bean was the principal. I took dictation from them and therefore was able to have skills when I was old enough. I graduated from high school at 17, so I had to wait a while before people would hire me, kind of thing. You had to be 18 when you applied for a job back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in the training department of Butler Armco, and then at the end, I would be secretary to the manager. I could not have achieved that without the education. Armco held mill operations classes for their apprentices to teach them. Where would the apprentices have even begun if we did not have public education? Math is so important.
Well, I tried to chat with this gentleman whenever I was interviewing him last week.
I know you were. You were so good. I told my son, I said, Dave is so wonderful, because I said, I think he was biting his tongue because he could have come back with a riposte. However, he was conducting an interview and let him talk. But I realized that I could have countered most of the things that he was spewing. I'm sorry, Dave. This idea of saying schools are like prisons, that's ridiculous. Of course you have to have rules. I mean, what little child will not do exactly what they want to do when they want to do it?
Yeah, I say the sooner...
You're talking about the little ones. I have four kids. I know how they behave.
Sooner you learn that, the better, I think. And a good place to learn it is in school. Listen, I've got to take a break here, but it was good to talk with you today.
Do. Thank you, Dave, though, for listening. I really appreciate your program.
My pleasure. We'll take a break. Back with more of the Tuesday edition. It's your turn here on WISR Open Talk right now. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours. Well, they've got some great trips coming up here. Some of them in the near future, mid-August, a trip to New York City. It's called Lady Liberty Weekend. See the Statue of Liberty and go to Ellis Island and all the other sites in New York, Central Park, Rockefeller Center, Broadway. A three-day trip. Check out details online at butlerbus.com. They're also taking another trip to Lancaster County in the Millennium Theater, where they've been presenting huge live on stage biblical epics for many years. The show this year is entitled Jesus, and that's a two-day trip in mid-August. Also, September the 1st, trip to the Cleveland Air Show. And a chance to board the lovely Nautica Queen for an afternoon lunch cruise on Lake Erie. That sounds nice. That's one day. So, you know, no matter what your schedule allows, whether it's just a one-day getaway or a week or two vacation, or maybe whatever the budget allows, you'll find something that'll fit you to a T through Butler Motor Tours. 75 years they've been around, taking folks from our area to places near and far. Check out their offerings online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com, Butler Motor Tours.
Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, the only executive-level fitness center in Butler, providing a clean, unintimidating environment with modern equipment and a full-time staff to assist you. A proud partner of the Silver Sneakers and Prime Networks, Applewood offers classes like Silver Sneakers, Pyo, and high-intensity interval training. Open daily, the fitness center has flexible membership options and discounts for students, military, and paid EMS employees. See more at applewoodchiro.com. Must have valid student or military ID or proof of EMS employment for discount.
Welcome back. It's Open Talk on this segment. If it's your turn, we're going to be chatting with our guest for today, Kim Dana Kupperman, in just a few minutes. I saw a piece on TV over the weekend. You know, we were talking last week all about the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, the man first stepping on the moon. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, 50 years ago. And I saw an interesting piece examining just why, for people who were alive then and old enough to remember it, why it felt like such an important thing. Because there are some people today, some younger folks, who have been kind of shrugging their shoulders at all of this hoopla over the 50th anniversary of landing on the moon. I say, well, what's the big deal? Why, you had to be around then. You know, we were wrapping up a very tumultuous decade. And I hadn't, I mean, I knew this, but I hadn't stopped to think about it, to put two and two together. You know, in the 1960s, we had civil rights legislation. We look back on it today, and it's hard to understand the difficulty in getting it passed. But we had riots. We had fierce debates in Washington before the civil rights legislation was finally pushed through. We had the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and then later his brother, Robert Kennedy, both gunned down. Martin Luther King, gunned down. And we had the Vietnam War that expanded, started in the 60s and expanded greatly, and then we had the Vietnam War protests. All of that, just a real tumultuous decade. And as we near the end of that decade, midsummer, July of 1969, we had this magnificent event that united everybody, you know, whether they were protesting the Vietnam War or battling for civil rights or mourning the violence and the assassinations that we had. Everybody could come together and agree on this, you know, wow event. Man on the moon. And it struck me because I hadn't thought of that before, even though I had ruminated quite a bit on the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. I hadn't really stopped to think of why it meant so much then and why for people who were alive at that time it still means so much. We were wrapping up a pretty rough stretch in our nation's history, the 1960s. Can it be 50 years ago? Is that possible? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it, does it? Hey, a break. And then we'll be chatting here in just a couple of minutes with our guest for today, Kim Dana Kupperman. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISI. Stick around. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
In 2019, Tri-River celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Mazzanegro, known by many as Dr. Muzzy, and I'm an orthopedic hip and knee surgeon. Patients do best when they are engaged with the process, educated, and invested in their own well-being. At Tri-Rivers, the patient is at the center of everything we do.
To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
We have an interesting story, a fascinating story, and an important story to talk about coming up, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is writer Kim Dana Kupperman, who joins us by telephone today. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
We want to talk about your book, historical fiction, entitled 6,000 Miles to Home, a novel inspired by a true story of World War II. And it's the story of a Jewish family from Western Poland, right, Kim?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, a small town on the border with the Czech Republic. Uh-huh.
So the Jewish family in your book is able to flee from the Nazis only to be captured by the Soviet army and deported to a forced labor camp. I don't think a lot of people would realize that this happened in World War II.
A lot of people don't know this story of 1.5 to 2 million Polish citizens who were deported into the Soviet forced labor system known as the Gulag. But it did happen, and unfortunately, only roughly 10% of that number came out of the Soviet Union, at least during the war. So it's a very little-known episode in the history of the war, and one which a lot of Polish people know, of course, but a lot of people who know about World War II history don't really know.
How did you get the details of this family?
Well, that's a very good question. So the family itself, there were no documents that they kept. There were no letters. There were no diaries. There were only very succinct paragraphs full of information, which went something like, during the war, we fled. We were deported into the Soviet Union. We got out. The end. So that's a compelling story, but it doesn't make for an entire book. So what we did was we embarked on quite a bit of research. There was a professional genealogist working with us, and he was able to unearth some very interesting documents. I traveled to Western Poland, the Czech Republic, to Ukraine, the town that they were deported from, and I did my own kind of character interviews with the family members. And what we were able to do was by using a variety of primary sources, we were able to more or less track their itinerary. And those sources included, of all things, some tickets that remained in their possession to pick up some coats at a furrier's that were dated in September that placed them in Warsaw at a particular time. Mm. It included some autobiographical writings by a friend of the family's who encountered them in the town of what was then called Lviv and is now called Lviv in southeastern Poland, where the father was incarcerated by the Soviets and from where the mother and her two teenage children were deported. And then we found the army records for the young man who was a teenage son at the time. He wound up going into the Polish army, which was formed after the Germans invaded the Soviet Union and the Allies negotiated the release of these prisoners. So his army records had one notation in it that said, what are the areas of the world that you're familiar with? And one of them was what is now known as the Mari El Republic, which is in northern Russia. And the only reason why he would have been familiar with that place is if he had been there as someone who had been deported there. So then we were able to locate where they were. Those Army records, in turn, helped us locate documents from the Polish Institute in London, and in particular, the field journal of one Lieutenant Kurkowski, to whom I am incredibly indebted because he had a very detailed description of the journey they made from Marjalan, which is a town in Uzbekistan, across Central Asia, across the Caspian Sea, to the shores of the Caspian on the Iranian side. And so that was phenomenal to have that piece of information. And that's essentially how we were able to track their movements and put together, if you will, a plot line for this historical novel.
My goodness, you did an incredible amount of research. Now, this is historical fiction. Did you use the real name of the family in your book, Kim?
Yes. All of their real names are used, and the only names we changed were really tertiary characters. We changed their last names, and that was it. And so we retained their names, and we wanted people to know who this family was. Mm. Yeah.
So the mother of the teenage kids was named Josefina, huh?
Yes. Josephine, I think, well, you know, there are very many different ways in a town in Western Poland, because originally this family was, they were subjects of the Habsburg Empire. It wasn't until after World War I, that this area became Poland. So one generation was German-speaking, and the next generation were Polish-speaking. And so she was Josephine, Josefa, Josefina. Her nickname in Polish was Finka. And as you can see, there's a variety of different names here. But I picked Josefina. I like the way that sounded.
And again, listeners, this is historical fiction. So what our guest, Kim Dana Kupperman, had to imagine and then write were the details of this incredible journey. 6,000 miles to home, although it really did happen based on the true story of this this Jewish family. Our guest, by the way, has a pretty distinguished writer, folks, a critically acclaimed writer. She's been a journalist. She edited the Gettysburg Review, and she's also taught writing at a number of universities, West Virginia Wesleyan, John Hopkins, writer-in-residence at Fordham. Do you still teach writing, Kim?
I teach privately now because I'm basically employed by the Susanna Cohen Legacy Foundation to help collect the stories that are similar to this story. And so I just teach privately right now. But I enjoy teaching very, very much. And it's something I miss. But right now, this is my vocation. And that's absolutely fine. I'm very happy to be doing this work.
Mm-hmm. You wrote this as a historical novel as opposed to a nonfiction narrative because there just simply wasn't that much definitive information, I guess, huh?
There wasn't definitive information from the family, so to speak. So if there had been letters and diaries, that would have been a very different situation, I think. And I would have been able to have relied on them as primary source documents to tell a more non-fictional style story. And so what we decided on, and I say we, I mean the family member who engaged me to write this story, was that he wanted to see the drama in this story. And it's hard to make drama out of things if you don't have those primary source documents like letters and diaries. And it wasn't going to be a first-person book about me researching the family. It was going to be about the family themselves. And so I relied really on the thoughts and observations of family members and friends who knew these three people. No one knew the father of the family, unfortunately, because he was executed by the Soviets. So we didn't have a lot of information about him. But we did have a lot of information about the characters of Josefina and her son Peter and her daughter Susanna. And so that's what I relied on to create these character studies. The rest of it, the history part, of course, is easy because it's easy to research what happened and the factual information. It's easy to read first-person accounts of what the gulag was like, and I read very many of those, and I can tell you that I am indebted greatly to the people who authored those testimonials. They helped me incredibly to construct a world gone awry, a world of horror, a world where the smallest kindness meant survival.
Everyone's trying to beat the heat, so why bring it into your kitchen? There's no need to slave over a hot stove when you can go to Michael's Restaurant. They're cooking burgers, hoagies, pizzas, soups, and salads to feed the entire family. So relax, stay cool, and take the family to Michael's Restaurant, Route 422 in Butler.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Hi, this is Pat Parker reminding you that you can tune to WISR 680 AM radio Saturdays after the CBS News at 10 AM for the phone party and audio auction. You can buy, sell, and trade items or mention garage or yard sales. You will also have the opportunity to bid on certificates from restaurants and other businesses and tickets from area locations. The phone number to keep in mind is 724-283-2525. That's 724-283-2525 for the phone party and audio auction on Saturdays after the 10 a.m. CBS News.
We're chatting on this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're chatting with author Kim Dana Kupperman about her book entitled 6,000 Miles to Home, a novel inspired by a true story of World War II. The family, ironically, once they finally escaped the Soviet Union, they ended up in Iran, of all places. I guess we forget our geography. Iran does border on the Caspian Sea, does it not?
Yes, it does. And at the time, of course, Iran was occupied by the Allies. So the British and the Russians, or the Soviets at the time, were in Iran. And thus, when the Polish army was formed, they were outfitted entirely by the British and trained by the British. And so we don't know this little bit of history either. This particular army was called Anders Army, A-N-D-E-R-S. That was the name of the general commanding them, Vladislav Anders, who had himself been incarcerated in Lubyanka prison in Moscow and had been released to lead the army once this negotiation had gone through to create the Polish army. They were called the Polish Free Army, but later Anders Army. And he led them, you know, to victory at the Battle of Monte Cassino, among other things. He is a real hero. And I say this because he kept asking the Soviets, where are all of the Polish officers? Where are they? I need them for this army. And the Soviets kept saying, we don't know, we don't know. And of course, what we learned much later is that 20,000 Polish officers had been executed at Katyn by the Soviets, who blamed it initially on the Germans and then took responsibility for it many, many, many years later. And so Anders knew not to trust Stalin. He was very prescient, and he knew that Stalin had in his mind to send these Polish soldiers to the Eastern Front. And he knew that they would all die because, remember, they were released from the gulag when they formed the army. Many of them were very, very sick. They were starving. And they needed first to be reconstituted as people before they could become soldiers. And so he negotiated their evacuation from the Soviet Union. And this was an incredibly prescient move. And I want to mention that one of the soldiers among in this army was Menachem Begin, who, you know, later became the prime minister in Israel. So, you know, you have to really think about what this man was able to accomplish, General Anders, and why he was a hero. And so there you have it. Anders' Army, you can look that up. He wrote a book about the experience, and there's been other historical books written about it as well that are very worth reading.
This harsh treatment and executions in many cases by the Soviets just because these people were Jewish?
No, just because okay, so Polish was more the reason that they were deported, is that they were Polish citizens. And not only that, but there were several waves of deportations from Poland into the Soviet Union. The first were the people who were landowners. They were not necessarily wealthy landowners, but they were farming landowners in eastern Poland, and they were the first to be deported. The second group included a category that the Soviets used called enemies of the state, which was all-encompassing. So the family in this book, the reason why the father was arrested is that he owned a tannery in his town in western Poland, and it was a family business that he had inherited. But he was considered a quote-unquote industrialist, which made him an enemy of the state. And so his family was deported because they were the family members of an enemy of the state, and he was arrested, and later he was also executed because he was an enemy of the state. So this class of enemy of the state included anyone who did not adhere to communist ideals. It included people who were intellectuals. It included people who owned businesses. It included people who were intelligentsia, you know, who worked in universities. The idea was basically to decapitate the society from the thinking people and basically herd the rest of the people into forced labor. And that's what happened.
Was it difficult for you to imagine the hardships that that these your story's characters went through during this period? I don't know. I just think it's so important to continue talking about this, and in your case, writing about this. We are almost 80 years now past World War II, and from what I read in Wire stories, upcoming generations are either not familiar with the Holocaust or don't know a whole lot about it. I just reread the book House on Garibaldi Street about the location and capture and then subsequent trial of Adolf Eichmann, and it just made me sick to read about this again and refresh my memory. Don't you feel it's important that we keep this in the public discussion, Kim?
Absolutely. I think we have many lessons to learn about how totalitarianism takes root in a culture. And if we examine both Nazi and Stalinist totalitarianism, we have all the lessons we need right there to prevent it from happening again. And I think this is extremely important that we do this, not only to keep the memory alive of people who perished, but to prevent this sort of disaster from happening ever again. And there are many, many lessons to be learned about totalitarianism from studying World War II in general. And we seem to have missed this. And, of course, you're correct that current generation may not be familiar with some of the facts of World War II. For example, if you ask most people how many concentration camps they think were around during the war, they may say as many as several thousand, as few as five. But in fact, there were 40,000 camps. And these included, of course, sub-camps of the larger camps. They included detention centers. They included extermination camps. They included forced labor camps. They included transit camps. And they included ghettos. So when we say concentration camps, of course, one of the first things that comes to mind is Auschwitz. And it should come to mind. But Auschwitz was enormous, and it had many sub-camps that people perished in as well. And a lot of people can't even locate Auschwitz on a map or know that the town's name, the Polish name, is Oswiecim. And it's in, you know, western Poland, very close to where this family came from, by the way. And if they had stayed, I have a feeling they would have been deported to Auschwitz.
One can't help but notice the parallels to today with the refugee and immigration crises that we have in many parts of the world today, you know?
Yes, there are. So after World War II, in Europe alone, there were upwards of 40 million displaced people or refugees. Today, there are close to 66 million. So, you know, I think if we looked at figures all over the world during World War II, we would probably see that there were many more displaced people and that we have the same kind of unparalleled refugee crisis today. And proportionately, we do have the same kind of refugee crisis today. And there is no world war going on. There are genocides that are being perpetrated, and people are being displaced by war, by famine, by weather-related events, you name it. They are being displaced forcibly from their homes and becoming refugees. And to, you know, have a situation where we have that many stateless people, and this was really the issue for refugees during World War II, Jewish refugees in particular, during the war. They were stateless. They had become stateless. And therefore, because they were stateless, it was possible to round them up and place them into detention centers known as concentration camps. Hmm. And this is the first thing that has to happen, is people must become stateless in order for them to be herded into detention centers of any kind.
What happened to the family that you follow in your books? So they fled the Nazis, then they were prisoners in the Soviet Union. They managed to get out of there into Iran. Did they ever make it to the United States, Kim?
Yes, they did. So this is a story with a happy ending, spoiler alert, but it's okay. What happened was the young man who was in the Army, as I said, he went on to become a decorated war hero. He demobilized in England, and he married, he had a son there. He wound up going to Argentina, where he settled, where part of his family had gone prior to the war. And in Argentina, he had more children, and now there are many grandchildren and great-grandchildren on the way. And so that branch of the family thrived, and they live in mostly in Argentina and also in England. And then the daughter, Susanna, she remained in Tehran. She married Persian Jewish gentleman who was the man who basically provided her and her mother with sanctuary and shelter and assistance. And Josephine, who is one of the central protagonists, she wound up going to England and settling there. She remarried. And Susanna lived in Tehran for upwards almost 40 years. She raised her family there. She completely integrated into the culture, became fluent in Farsi, became fluent with all of the customs, and became a beacon to other young women in the community, in the Persian Jewish community. And then what happened was they were exiled from Iran with the Iranian Revolution. and they came to the United States, and they settled in California. And now there are hundreds of descendants of this family, and that's the miracle part, is that there are hundreds of descendants, because both Susanna and her brother were the only two on her father's side of the family not only to have survived World War II, but to have had children. And that's remarkable. So, you know, given the odds of everything, and the odds were stacked against them from the very beginning of the Second World War.
One of the lesser-known episodes of World War II, based on a true story, 6,000 Miles to Home, a novel inspired by a true story of World War II, written by Kim Dana Kupperman, who's been our guest here on It's Your Turn for the past few minutes. Kim, nice to meet you. Thanks for being with us today.
It's very nice to meet you, and thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Oh, same here. So long now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
In 2019, Tri-River celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Mazzanegro, known by many as Dr. Muzzy, and I'm an orthopedic hip and knee surgeon. Patients do best when they are engaged with the process, educated, and invested in their own well-being. At Tri-Rivers, the patient is at the center of everything we do.
To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Fascinating story there from Kim Dana Kupperman about a little-known chapter of the Second World War. And every time I hear about something in the Second World War that I was not familiar with or didn't know about, it makes you shudder. I mean, I was not alive at that time, but I can't imagine what it must have been like, first of all, to serve overseas during that time, either in Europe or in the Pacific, or to be back home here in the United States while loved ones, and it was mostly men back in those days, loved ones, husbands, sons, fiancés were halfway around the world, either in Europe or in the Pacific, fighting. How senseless, huh? How senseless, World War. Let's hope that the current situation with Iran doesn't escalate into something like that. Horrendous. Coming up on tomorrow's program, hey, we get to say hello for the first time to the new interim director of the VA Butler Healthcare. Her name is Sharon Coyle. She'll be with us on tomorrow's program. We'll also be learning more about the Mission Act, which has just gone into effect within the past month or so, I believe, in the Veterans Administration at hospitals across the country, medical centers across the country. So I'll learn a little bit more about that with another guest, Robert King, both with us on the It's Your Turn program tomorrow, starting at 12:30. Program note for tonight, Pirate baseball. Pirates, another incredible, heartbreaking loss last night in extra innings to the Cardinals. Beat them Bucks. Let's go get them tonight down at PNC Park. Airtime 6:40. For Pirate warm-up here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your day. It's a little bit warmer than the weather folks had predicted. Very comfortable Right now we're at 75 degrees here in downtown Butler. Hope you can be with us tomorrow at 12:30 for the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Still I am the warmth of the sun.